Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome one and all to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, the details just keep coming out about Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, and his relationship with a Florida eye doctor, which doesn't sound so bad on the surface, but this guy, Solomon Melgen, I'm not sure exactly how you say his last name, but the point is that, of course, he's been connected with this accusation of Senator Menendez being with underage hookers in the Dominican Republic. Now it turns out, according to the Washington Post, that Menendez was also helping his doctor friend avoid penalties for alleged Medicare fraud to the tune of $8.9 million. He had overbilled the government. The government called him on it, and Menendez tried to get him off the hook by saying, well, the billing rules are really confusing and this sort of thing. So that's good news number one, that more is coming out here. The other thing is that apparently the Democratic establishment is not willing to lay down very much to defend Bob Menendez, because the fact that the liberal media is now coming out in droves, even on the front page of the Washington Post, means that any effort to basically sweep this all under the rug has been abandoned.
Not only the top, above the fold, top of page A1 in the Washington Post. You wonder if the Washington Post was a little embarrassed that the Miami Herald had really driven this story and gotten the scoop on what was a very Washington-based story. But they send someone to the Dominican Republic, to Casa de Campo, which is this exclusive resort. And it describes, you know, everyone is someone, it's said, at Casa de Campo, and such someones. Dominican real estate tycoons, Venezuelan oil honchos, Cuban-American sugar barons, European heirs and heiresses. And of course, and this is where Menendez was hanging around with this Melgen character. It's one of those things where there's nothing explicitly criminal in hanging around with these people. But it certainly isn't, what is Robert Menendez doing his free time? He hangs around with the elites of the Caribbean in a heavily guarded compound for the rich and famous, which certainly makes it the whole allegations of influence peddling and people buying themselves a friend in the Senate certainly emits an odor. And you don't see this kind of story written about somebody if the press wants to ignore it. The placement, once again, is at the top of the style section in the Washington Post. Somebody in the Washington Post has decided Bob Menendez is no longer worth protecting. And I don't know if it's because they decided, oh, he's a New Jersey senator named Bob, and going on the Torricelli precedent, figured he probably, he might, you know, back in 2001 to 2003, I wrote for a wire service, and one of my papers was the Bergen Record. And Torricelli's spokeswoman back then was a woman named Deborah DeShong, very good-natured considering the extraordinarily difficult job in front of her of protecting the reputation of Bob Torricelli. And so eventually I created a macro on my computer. I just had to hit control something for it to say, Torricelli spokeswoman Deborah DeShong vehemently denied the allegations. And it just fit for every story, every possible allegation of wrongdoing. You're getting that whiff and that vibe from Bob Menendez here. And what's really kind of interesting is that, you know, he vehemently denied the underage prostitution allegations. And as of yet, no one has turned up a prostitute who has been willing to speak on the record or to verify those accusations. However, this stuff may be as bad. And we've already gotten to the point where he's already taken two flights on this guy Melgen's private jet twice. And oops, totally forgot to reimburse him because senators aren't supposed to take gifts like that. And paid $58,000. And most people have calculated that $58,000 has to be some significant chunk of his life savings right now, based on his financial disclosure report. This was not a casual omission. The suspicion is that he didn't want anybody knowing why he was doing to going to the Dominican Republic. And if he didn't want people knowing he was going to the Dominican Republic, what was he doing there? You know, perhaps it wasn't quite as bad as prostitution with underage women, but probably something that definitely emits an odor is going on here. So Senator Menendez is now, you know, it's not the problem is not going away from Menendez, and I don't know if he'll be able to outlast all of the digging into these matters.
Yeah, the potential excuse of I was not engaged with underage prostitutes, I was just helping a friend commit Medicare fraud, that's probably not.
Exactly, yeah, that's not the spin that's really going to work that well.
All right, on to martini number two now, and this is probably one of the better bad martinis we've ever had, but the interesting shift in the media, you mentioned, we've talked about now the media shifting and declaring Bob Menendez fair game. There's been a very interesting media shift over the past week or so on Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and by no coincidence, it's probably because he's part of this Gang of Eight, perhaps the most conservative member of that gang, who is now behind this bipartisan immigration push. My suspicion, Jim, is still that by the time Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin are done with this thing, that Rubio will be off the bandwagon, and that might change its fate in the U.S. Senate, but we'll see. Nonetheless, he's getting a lot of attention. He has been chosen to give the Republican response to the State of the Union address next Tuesday, and he's got a profile coming up in the new edition of Time magazine for the 12 people that still read that. And it's just interesting how taking a more mainstream, perhaps even more liberal position on one issue will get the media to love you, at least for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, worth noting, this is the cover of Time magazine, and the headline is literally "The Savior of the GOP," and it is a very flattering photo. So he tweeted out, "There's only one savior, and I'm not him." So I think that was exactly the right response. Look, I'm somebody who wrote a profile of Rubio back in like the summer of 2009 or so. I mean, this is well before he was the Marco Rubio we knew. I knew this guy was destined for big things. He was a rising star. And so it's great to see the spotlight on him. However, you can't help but notice that a certain amount of the attention has sweetened, I guess you could say, since he joined this Gang of Eight. I think you and I have discussed problems we have with this legislation. I think a lot of conservatives really want to figure out how this, you know, the details of this. Whether does this amount to an amnesty by giving, you know, the 11 million people here a non-immigrant visa that allows them to work and stay in this country? Well, no matter what else you want them to do, pay back taxes, pay fees, all this other stuff, you do end up basically a amnesty, you know, not punishing them for breaking the law. I think you saw David Vitter saying that he really likes and respects Rubio, but he thinks he's being naive on this. The possibility that Rubio is signing on to something that is actually deep down going to hurt the Republican Party and alienate the base and, make it okay to break the law and come to this country illegally. It is unnerving to see how much people, the glowing love affair beginning, kind of like what Chris Christie had when he embraced Obama after Hurricane Sandy. And so I'd hate to see that happen to Rubio, too. I want him to get good press, but I don't want him to get good press because he's perceived as a sensible Republican, not like one of those crazy right wing Republicans. And I think this will only it could damage a what could be a very beautiful relationship between Marco Rubio and the conservative grassroots. Just something for the Rubio people to be in on alert for. I will add one other point to this story, just to give a quick indication of why I like Rubio so much. Earlier this morning, upon seeing this, I had tweeted, "Pah, Rubio's nothing until he's on the cover of Cat Fancy." And somebody on the Rubio team shot back and said, "Why haven't you done the Photoshop yet?" So they're perfectly happy to see their guy on Cat Fancy. They seem to have a good sense of humor about these things. And so whatever you think of the amnesty or the immigration reform legislation, Rubio's a good guy. I just hate to see him be perceived as a mainstream media favorite and thus somehow not an authentic conservative anymore.
Absolutely right. Even if we do fundamentally disagree on this issue, and I'm still not convinced that we do, but we'll see how his position plays out here as this whole debate unfolds. But he is
the short version is, if the legislation shakes out the way Marco Rubio describes it, well, then it sounds pretty good. If it shakes out the way Chuck Schumer describes it, then it's terrible. And they're both sponsoring allegedly the same legislation, so they can't both be right,
Yeah, that's why you have to wait until it's actually written and read, as a matter of fact, as we've learned before. But Marco Rubio, fabulous spokesman for the party and the conservative vision. Great speech at the convention introducing Mitt Romney last year, and a rock solid conservative on virtually every issue. So even if we end up not being on the same sides of the immigration debate, and we still might, Marco Rubio is still a great, great conservative leader in this country and for this movement. On to martini number three now, and once upon a time, this was a good martini as well, and this one might not be all that bad either. Jesse Jackson Jr., former Illinois congressman, spent a lot of time in rehab. Now, of course, he is part of a federal probe for misusing campaign funds, and now we learn, Jim, that he is looking at significant jail time. Significant jail time is now definitely a part of the deal, said a top source close to the probe. This is also very interesting that his wife is now part of a separate probe. His wife, Sandy, according to this report from the Chicago Sun-Times, feels like she was thrown under the bus by her husband in a great Casablanca moment. Sandy Jackson claims she was stunned by campaign finance abuse disclosures against her husband, who basically spent campaign cash remodeling their house, buying $40,000 Rolexes and all sorts of other things, but absolutely flabbergasted his wife was to find out about all this.
Yeah, worth noting. I mean, First of all, when the plea deal includes significant jail time, man, you must, you know, what is that down from? I mean, that kind of screams that the government had a very strong case and that, you know, Jackson Jr.'s lawyer is saying, look, you know, take whatever deal you can get. We're going to get slaughtered if we put this before a jury. And then, you know, the idea of his wife getting thrown on, like, man, this is just a pit of vipers that represents what Chicago politics is. You kind of, there's certainly an element of tragedy to that. I hope that Jackson is able to get his life together. But if he indeed broke the law and you know, used his campaign funds for personal purchases and stuff like that, he's got to pay the consequence for it. And it sounds like he will pay the consequence for it. You know, perhaps Mrs. Jackson will as well. I do think whenever something like this happens, and I think about this, you know, with John Edwards, with, you know, Anthony Weiner, whenever you see some high-profile public figure do something really egregious, I want to go back to everybody who ever endorsed him, everybody who ever stood up and said, this is a good man, the people who gave John Edwards that Father of the Year award and stuff like that, and say, what were you thinking? Like, I know you don't see the whole person, but you really had no clue that this person had this sort of thing, you know, these sorts of behaviors, these sorts of problems, these sorts of, in the case of Jackson, potentially criminal behavior going on. And did you avert your eyes? Did you pretend not to see because this person was a political ally? And if so, why should anyone listen to you ever again? I used to joke that anybody who voted for John Edwards should spend at least the next two presidential cycles sitting out and contemplating the error of their ways. And look, there's always been these kinds of allegations around Jesse Jackson Jr. And to see his story end this way is tragic, but it also kind of says, hey, wait a minute. Maybe this is why Chicago should have a two-party system. Maybe this is why it shouldn't be a one-party town, which everybody covers for each other and everybody's, you know, to quote the brilliant cinematic masterpiece and political statement, Batman Begins, in a town this bent, who are you going to report it to? You know, it says something about the culture of corruption in Chicago and that Jackson was able to do this kind of stuff for so long and, in fact, quite literally have mental problems and everyone kind of averted their eyes. And I think, you know, you look back to the congressman out in Oregon who dressed up in the tiger suit and stuff. I mean, there are some genuinely crazy people in Congress, Greg, and everybody kind of averts their eyes and pretends that, you know, because they're in a powerful position. And I think, it's not quite Nero's horse ending up in the Senate or something like that, but it feels like we're just not too far from, you know, ending up in that, end of everything state of chaos.
Jim, I think you started a new betting pool. A couple weeks ago, we made multiple references to the Die Hard franchise. This week, it's the Christopher Nolan Batman series. What could it be in the weeks ahead? That's what everyone wants to know. So you have to stay tuned to find out.
Sounds good. Sounds good, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.